You are listening to a free podcast of The Majority Report with Sam Cedar. To support the show and receive nearly an hour extra material daily, become a member today at majority.fm. Resistance is futile.
It's Sam Cedar, launching an illegal invasion and occupation of your brain.
This episode of The Majority Report is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, including fiction, nonfiction, and periodicals. For a free audiobook of your choice, go to audiblepodcast.com/majority report. It's free. Do it.
The Majority Report with Sam.
The destiny of America is always safer in the hands of the people than in the conference rooms of any elite.
Sam Cedar.
They are unanimous in their hate for me, and I welcome their hatred.
We must guard against the acquisition of unwarranted influence, whether sought or unsought, by the military-industrial complex.
The Majority Report with Sam Cedar.
And I get the feeling you've been cheated.
It is Wednesday, October 31st, 2012. My name is Sam Cedar. This is the award-winning Majority Report. We are broadcasting live, barely, in the literal, though not metaphorical, shadow of the New York Times building in the fashionable Dollar Lunch District of New York City, a city in many respects devastated by Hurricane Sandy. Power remains out the lower part of Manhattan and throughout different parts of the five boroughs. Subways submerged underwater, not running, limited bus service, no cell phone service in lower Manhattan. I don't know about the outer boroughs. Michael managed to get in here through a series of buses, jogging half the way. I am here on my folding bike. Today on the program, Matt Stoller with a very provocative piece that has been much discussed online, the progressive case against Obama. I anticipate we're going to have some points of disagreement, some points of agreement. That's what it's all about, I guess. Also on the program today, Mitt Romney. The election slips away from him. Desperate in Ohio. And blowback from his false claims about Chrysler Jeeps being manufactured in China, or I should say, to the exclusion of more manufacturing in the United States. Also, new report, the Romney campaign in Wisconsin at least has been specifically training its so-called poll watchers to suppress the vote. And a look into Mitt Romney's hurricane politics. A couple of more of his fake charity events. And just what will happen to FEMA under a Mitt Romney budget. With all that said, ladies and gentlemen, let us start first with... And you're going to have to forgive us today, obviously, ladies and gentlemen. We are shorthanded. We are shorthanded. I have sciatica now, apparently, today. I don't know why. And a little discombobulated. Wasn't sure if we had electricity. Wasn't sure if we had internet here.
We do. Had some flickering of lights uptown where I live, but basically, aside from the fact that I've been locked in an apartment for going on 48 hours with my family, thankfully, we're all safe. Schools have been canceled now for the third straight day in Manhattan, at least, I imagine, also citywide, completely citywide. And, of course, because there's no subways, I don't know if there's going to be school for the rest of the week. My daughter seems to be going stir crazy. I walked around a little bit over the past couple of days, nothing at the height of the storm. It depends on where you were in New York City. If you're anywhere near the water, it was really ugly. Parts of Manhattan, I'm sure you've seen the pictures, submerged, particularly in southern Manhattan. But also along the riverbanks, parks still closed because of fallen trees and weakened trees. And there was no vehicles on the streets today. There seems to be a lot of vehicles, but it's traffic is slow moving. Great time to try out congestion taxation, right? To charge, but it won't happen. Would be nice. But first, let's go to this. Ladies and gentlemen, there are a lot of indicators out there as to who is going to win this election. If you are liberal and effete and effeminate, apparently Nate Silver is your guy, according to the right wing, who have been attacking Nate Silver for, I don't know, the way he speaks, the way he dresses, and the fact that he does math. And he is predicting some 70% chance of President Obama winning, maybe a little bit more. It varies on a day-to-day basis. He compiles averages, polls, weights, different polls, just like pollsters do. They're constantly weighting different factors as having more influence than others. Some people go to trade sports, which seems to me to be ridiculous. I know that if I had millions of dollars and wanted to make it look like my candidate was winning, I think I would just buy a bunch of bets to that effect. But nevertheless, I have my own barometer of President Obama's chances of winning, one that is not wispy or effete, one that is not in any way shaped by people placing bets. Its name is Chris Christie. And all you need to do is basically, it's sort of like when the groundhog comes up out of its hole, sees its shadow. It's one of those things. What you do is involves donuts, and that's all I'm going to say. But then you wait and see what Christie says following an emergency. And Chris Christie has come out and been praising President Obama's response to this hurricane, to this disaster on the East Coast. He said, even on Fox News, I spoke to the president three times yesterday. He called me for the last time at midnight last night asking what he could do. I said, if you can expedite designating New Jersey as a major disaster area, that would help us get federal money and resources in here as quickly as possible to help clean up the damage here. And even though he's on Fox with the douches asking him, but what about Mitt Romney? Mitt Romney's going to come and visit. And Chris Christie says, I have no idea whether or not he is, nor am I the least bit concerned or interested. I've got a job to do here in New Jersey. It's much bigger than presidential politics, and I could care less about any of that stuff. I can assure you, if there was a bone or an ounce inside of Chris Christie that thought that Mitt Romney was going to be the next president, he would be singing a different tune. So Chris Christie, in addition to, in this case, as a broken clock, doing the right thing, praising President Obama for him being out in front of this disaster, which I'm sure President Obama was for, you know, being mindful of the political implications of these type of things. But nevertheless, still doing the right thing. Chris Christie basically announcing, I think this race is over. I don't think there's a chance that Mitt Romney is going to be involved in Republican politics as of November 7th. And I'm running in 2016. So Take that, Steve Ducey. All right, we got to take a break. When we come back, we'll be talking to Matt Stoller on his piece, The Progressive Case Against Obama. We'll be right back after this. This episode of The Majority Report is brought to you by Audible.com, the internet's leading provider of audiobooks, with more than 100,000 downloadable titles across all types of literature, featuring audio versions of many New York Times bestsellers. Go to audiblepodcast.com/majority report. Get yourself a free audio book. Why not pick up, since we're getting close to the election and we could use a little comedic break, America Again, Rebecoming the Greatness We Never Weren't, by Stephen Colbert. And it's nominated by Stephen Colbert, Tim Meadows, and a guy named Jordan Ruderman. Probably funny, too. Audiblepodcast.com/majority report. Get a free version of that now. Okay, we are back on the phone. It is a pleasure to welcome to this program Matt Stoller, former congressional staffer, formerly of Open Left, also
Naked Capitalism.
Naked Capitalism
Roosevelt Institute.
And also, hold on for 1 second. And sorry about that. We're having a little problems. Matt, can you hear me? Are you there?
I am, yes.
Sorry about that. We're having a little bit of technical difficulties. Ladies and gentlemen, Matt Stoller, welcome to the program, Matt.
Hey, thanks a lot.
Sorry, we're having some hurricane, post-hurricane related difficulties, but thank you for your patience. So,
absolutely unacceptable.
Yes, I understand. Well, you know the world of pre-recorded radio and podcasting.
Fine.
There is no.
This is amazing.
Go ahead. Sorry. All right. So you've written this piece in Salon, The Progressive Case Against Obama. For those people who haven't had an opportunity to see it, just lay out what your piece is about.
So it's a. There's two basic arguments. One is that under Barack Obama, and this is not necessarily causal, although I think it is, under Barack Obama, economic inequality has increased to levels that are higher than those under George Bush. And the economy that he's shaped has is essentially a one that is about resource extraction. So America is turning into a petrostate because of the policy that Barack Obama has pursued. And this policy framework involved had two components. One was to reflate assets held by the wealthy, and the second was to not reflate assets held by the middle class, which is mostly home equity, so the foreclosure crisis. And so that's the first argument, that these bad things happened to America, and it was because of Barack Obama's policies. The second part of the argument is that one should not support Barack Obama because one should recognize that the key moments of policy leverage, which is really what we should care about as citizens, is how our government governs, are not actually always about elections. They are increasingly about how to respond to crises. And so we should focus on building networks of people who are intellectually and politically reliable, intellectually and politically consistent. And then when crises happen, which we just saw one with Sandy, to have these networks jump out and activate and demand action around the policy ideas that we want. So, for instance, after 9/11, George Bush said, no shopping. And there was no response from liberals, but neoconservatives were able to use that moment to change the constitutional order, launch a bunch of wars, et cetera, et cetera. And after the financial crisis, liberals didn't do anything and had no response. And so the Bob Rubinites were able to restructure the economy in this very oligarchical fashion. So we need to recognize that the dynamic is one of crises, and that supporting politicians who implement policies that are against our interests is works against that strategy of having reliable political and intellectual networks.
Okay, and you know, now, so let's, I mean, let's, I don't want to spend too much time on the first part of the argument, because I mean, I think clearly we have a continued inequality, and in fact, coming out of the recession to the extent that we have, and that I think is even an arguable proposition, but to the extent that we have come out of the recession, it is clear that there were opportunities for President Obama, putting aside the fact and acknowledging on some level that he was obstructed in certain areas. There were clearly certain areas where he wasn't obstructed. At the very least, there was money in TARP, which could have gone to homeowners, which could have maybe not. I mean, I don't think it's quite possible to have made people whole in terms of an aggregate equity because we had a real estate bubble. But he certainly could have without, I mean, the money was there. He certainly could have had his administration direct more relief directly to homeowners rather than continually feeding the banks, essentially, and hoping that in, you know, it's hard to know exactly what the intent was, but we know at the very least that it was to foam the runways for the banks. And I guess the thinking goes, and hopefully they will then spread largesse to the common folk, as it were. That didn't quite work out that way. And it seems slightly ridiculous to assume that the banks would have operated in that fashion. But so leaving aside for a moment, I mean, do you agree with my analysis there? I mean, like you say, it's arguable as to whether or not President Obama, his policies have led to a continuation of these income disparities. But I think it's inarguable that there weren't other things he could have done which could have at least lessened it.
So under George Bush, 65 cents of every dollar went to the top 1% in terms of the income growth of the economy. Under Barack Obama, that number increased to 93 cents of every dollar. So in the economic recovery, nearly all the gains went to the top 1%, which was not true under Bush, and it was less true under Clinton, and so going back and whatnot. What you have to understand is that this was a policy choice. It's not that he didn't do enough. It's that he did plenty, and there were discretionary choices that he made and his people made that were important in terms of crafting the society that we have. And these include not prosecuting anyone on Wall Street, whipping aggressively for TARP, forcing a 50-state settlement on the foreclosure crisis, explicitly not addressing the foreclosure crisis and lying to the public about foreclosure mitigation programs, and appointing Ben Bernanke. And so what you see, and the Fannie Freddie bailouts, et cetera, and so forth, what you've seen is that essentially what Obama has done, and Bush started it, but Obama solidified it, is that he has entrenched a two-tiered society where if you are of a certain economic strata, you have officially supercharged political and property rights. And if you are middle class, you have property rights to the extent that the powerful want to give them to you. That's why the robo-signing scandal, where millions of documents were falsified and there were millions of cases of fraud on the court, no one was ever prosecuted. Because what's happened is that Barack Obama has transformed our society into one where the middle class doesn't actually have rights except to the extent that the powerful want to give them to that. And that's a pretty profound transformation. I think we have to recognize that as a transformation and as an explicit one and as something that Barack Obama intended to do, and say, okay, now that he did this, what is our response? Instead of sort of the kind of, oh, well, he could have done more, but you know, no, this guy had a policy agenda and he enacted it. And what now, what do we do? And this is the shape the country because of that.
Okay. And so and we also, I think it's also fair to mention, too, that the context in which coming out of a recession, it is not necessarily, and there were policy choices. It is not like you say, there's not necessarily a causal connection here because we are coming out of a massive financial crisis. And I think certainly the income growth stuff could have been in some way mitigated. However, it's not necessarily causal, but I think there's definitely a good argument there. So
no, I don't agree with that. I think
what I was saying before, in terms of
the causation, is that some of the arguments have been, oh, it's not causal. But in fact, the way that you come out of a recession is highly determinative of the shape of the country as it comes out of a recession. Sorry, the policies that are implemented. And so what happened in 2008 is Barack Obama, you know, essentially took office during the transition or slightly before in terms of his legislative priorities. And the country's banking system and economy was flat on its back. And everybody looked at him and said, how are we going to come out of this? What is the shape of our economy? And Barack Obama said, we are going to bail out the auto industry. We are going to bail out the banks. We are going to do a whole series of things, some of which were good, like the bailouts of the auto industry. I think those were smart. But there were important policy choices that were made that dictated the shape of the recovery. And Franklin Delano Roosevelt, faced with a similar situation, made different choices. And so the shape of the recovery was far more egalitarian. And so it's how you deal with excessive amounts of debt really does matter. And Barack Obama chose to deal with it in certain ways, and FDR chose to deal with it in different ways. And so I do think it's absolutely 100% causal. And so does Barack Obama, which is why he's bragging about the auto bailouts.
Right. I mean, I'm just going by what you had said at the beginning of this interview, which was that it's not necessarily causal. But be that as it may, I mean, all right, if you want to argue that there's a one.
No, I wasn't saying that. What I was saying is the argument from people, the response to the piece has been, oh, well, this isn't necessarily causal. And I was trying to lay out, you know, I was trying to lay out the argument clearly and some of the points. The indisputable fact is that inequality has increased.
Right.
Now, my argument is about causality.
Okay.
So, fair enough.
And so the second part of the argument is that we need to form a better progressive response in anticipation of the next crisis, because those are obviously the window. Those represent the greatest windows for opportunity for genuine change that would egalitarian progressive change that we seek. And to a large extent, I very much agree with that. I'm not sure I have any issue with that. The real question is to what extent voting for a third party, and let's just focus this conversation in the context of swing states, because I think it's pretty clear, and this is a conversation that we've had on this program for months and months and months. It is really clear I think that if you're in a safely blue state, there's much more latitude, and the implications of your vote there are frankly not as relevant. So let's narrow this to in a swing state. What is to be gained by voting for a third party in the context of a swing state?
Well, I mean, I think the argument, from my perspective, is that, you know, you're taking a big risk with either Obama or Romney. And under Obama, I mean, I think the best phrase is from Black Agenda Report, he's not the lesser of two evils, he's just the more effective evil. He's very good at, for instance, cutting Social Security, which is why he was able to cut the payroll tax and defund Social Security without any opposition from Democrats. And I don't think that a Republican could have done that. And so the argument the argument against Mitt Romney is pretty obvious, that he would be a very bad conservative president, that he could attack Iran, that he could do some very terrible things. Given that he has a relatively moderate track record in Massachusetts, but he's surrounded by some very scary people, you know, it's impossible to know what the guy would actually do in office. I look at him and I say he's a Republican establishment guy. But you know, who knows? The argument with Barack Obama is that he has already indicated what he is going to do, and he has said many times that he wants to drill for more oil and that he wants to cut entitlements. He offered a deal to John Boehner to cut entitlements. He wants to go after what is left of the New Deal state. And the reason that one should feel uncomfortable about that is because Barack Obama has shown that he is very effective at putting Democrats to sleep, and that when the public actually constrains the president doesn't always have as much freedom of action to do as much damage as he might want to do. And I think that the public will be more aroused against Mitt Romney than they will against Barack Obama. Now, whether that will produce better policy as a whole, I don't know. I'm not sure if Mitt Romney or Barack Obama would be a worse president. But I do think that it's important, and this is why one should not support Barack Obama, I do think it's important for us to say, as the public, we do not accept the policymaking of either party at this point, and of either, frankly, not sorry, party, but of Barack Obama or Mitt Romney. We think that both of them are malevolent, and it is important to say that. It's important to say that as an individual. It's important to say that as a set of people who belong to institutions, membership organizations, and so forth. That is the only thing that will constrain these guys from doing terrible things to us.
Now, all right, I want to work backwards here because I don't view voting, particularly in the context of in those elections in a swing state, as a mode of expression. I think that it has real world implications. It's very, in my mind, it's a very pragmatic act. So the implications, I mean, you stated in the piece that you don't think any of these third party candidates have a chance to win. I agree with that assessment. So effectively, when you're saying vote for a third party, and you're talking to progressives, right? You're basically saying, for those of you who are contemplating voting for Obama, the actual impact in terms of the election is you should basically give a half vote to Romney. I mean, is that a fair, do you think that's just a fair assessment of that call, of the implications of that call?
No, I don't. I think that nobody owns your vote. And I don't think that if you know, there's a lot of people who might choose not to vote. The alternative, the third party might just be not voting. You know, 100 million people don't vote every presidential election cycle. But I also think that voting is relatively unimportant in terms of social change. And if you want to start with real social change, then, you know, why isn't there a massive protest right now to do something about climate change all over the country? We have an effective set of environmental institutions. Certainly the energy is there, although it may be difficult to do it in the Northeast in terms of logistics, but the energy is there, but the institutional leadership isn't. And the point of voting for a third party is not to have a third party win, because that isn't going to happen this time. It's more a self-identification and practice for standing up against the establishment, because these guys, when the pressure is on, like during TARP or 9/11 or any other moment, these guys just say, if you don't do what we tell you to do, the sky will fall and everything will go, you know, to into terrible places. And that is exactly what they are saying with this election. It's exactly the message they're delivering.
Yeah, but hold on for one second.
For Barack Obama. And they're not even just saying sweet states. They're saying everywhere because he might have a popular
– Hold on for one second.
– loss.
So, but the fact is, the title of your piece is The Progressive Case Against Obama. You're speaking to people – I mean, you're not speaking to people who have no plans to vote. You're speaking to people who have plans to vote for Obama. I mean, why else write this piece? To the extent that you're making an argument, we can get a sense of who your audience is. Your audience is those people who are planning to vote for Obama. If they don't vote, or they vote for a third party candidate who we agree has no chance to win, they are increasing the likelihood. The one thing that we can be sure of, I mean, this is a mathematical equation. The one thing they're increasing the likelihood is that we will have Mitt Romney as president. I mean, I don't think I'm making a controversial argument here. I'm following the lines of what you're saying. I mean, that is the implication. You'll own that part of it. We can argue if it's also self-identification and the value of that afterwards. But I mean, let's just agree with what we know are the real world implications. Maybe Romney, and we can have this argument too as to whether or not Romney will be worse than Obama and for whom. But let's at least agree on the implications of what you're suggesting here. And I'm not saying that these are, this is wild. I think it's certainly within the bounds of a rational argument, but it will contribute to Mitt Romney's ability to become president.
What's your obsession with this?
What's my obsession with it?
Yeah, why are you trying to say? I'm just saying
that you take an action. And if I just want to be able to move forward in this conversation.
Look, Sam,
so I'm doing an interview on your piece.
There are tremendous risks to both Mitt Romney and Barack Obama as president. All right. Now, I think that those risks need to be acknowledged. And I don't think people are acknowledging the risk of another term of Barack Obama.
I can assure
my
you.
Piece was intended to convey that.
Months.
And
Matt,
the show. I'm sorry, but don't reduce it. Don't reduce the piece to a, I want to throw this election to Mitt Romney.
I'm not I'm not doing that.
And you don't have, honestly, you don't have data on who read the piece and their political choices, and neither do I. And I think that it's really, problematic to reduce this
I
just want Mitt Romney to be president.
I'm trying
and I don't
to
think that
do this
fair.
Methodically, Matt. I'm just trying to make, you're asking people, you're arguing for people to do action A. And all I'm talking about so that we can move forward.
No, I'm not, Sam. I'm not. I'm arguing for people to do a lot of things.
But if you want to start, and if you want to say this is action D, that's fine. But in the context of the election, you're asking people, and okay, we don't have data on who read the piece.
Here's an action that I think people should take. I think they should go to both Barack Obama and Mitt Romney and say, what are you going to do about the obvious climate catastrophes that are heading our way? And if one of them gives an answer that you think makes sense, and I don't mean denying climate change and I don't mean acknowledging it, but saying that you're going to drill for oil and coal anyway, I mean a real answer, then vote for that person. Or, or go to them and say, hey, there's a strike at Walmart, and it's probably the most fundamental economic organization in our country, or maybe even in the world. What do you think about that? And if they give an answer, then vote for that you like, then vote for that person. I'm arguing for people to do protest. I'm arguing for people to do direct action. I'm arguing for people to have the political and intellectual integrity to want power for social justice. And that's my fundamental argument. I don't particularly care who wins in this election. It doesn't matter. And so if you throw your, and I think a lot of people feel the way that I do. And I'm not sure that those people were going to vote anyway. So maybe my piece was being read by people who were not, choosing to vote. Who knows?
Well, we don't know who read your piece. I don't have the stats. You don't have the stats. They don't exist. We can't possibly know. And maybe it was I don't know why you have to entitle it a progressive case against Obama. Why not a conservative case against Obama? Why not? I mean, the point is, if we're not going to acknowledge, I guess the piece is meaningless if people were already going to vote for a third party, or if they weren't going to vote at all, the piece is meaningless. All I'm trying to say, and I want to get to these other aspects of it. All I'm trying to say is that let's do it this way. Let's make it a hypothetical, and I'm putting out the caveat here. There's a hypothetical for someone who was planning to vote for President Obama, and they read your piece and they decide, and they live in Ohio, let's say, or wherever, a swing state like the swing states you mentioned, and they vote for a third party, or they don't vote at all. Will you at least acknowledge in that hypothetical situation, maybe there's no one like that who would read your piece, but in that hypothetical situation, it does increase the chances of Mitt Romney winning? This is simply math. I mean, I just want to, this is something that, in the context of me, I'm not obsessed with this. I'm only obsessed with it because it only appears that way because I assume this would be an answer that's a relatively quick response. If you don't, it's a different answer. If you think there's no difference between the two, it doesn't matter. This question's not loaded in any way. I mean, you sense that I think there's
okay. Let's just move on.
All right. Well, mathematically, I think this is indisputable, but. And maybe it's
in the
case,
in the scenario that you've laid out, let's say that there is an undecided voter who is the deciding vote, and they have been thinking about voting for Obama, and they read this piece and they say, "I'm going to vote third party." In that case, it would affect the election.
Okay.
Alternatively, they could be a Romney voter, and they could decide to vote third party. And that also could affect the election.
Right. But, I don't know why they would be listening for the progressive case against Obama and decide to vote for a third party. I mean, you don't even outline their third party.
Because I believe that my arguments are persuasive, and I think that they're persuasive to people who are on the right, and they're persuasive to people on the left.
Okay. This argument seems to be directed at the left, but that's fine. Okay. That's fine. So now let's just take this one by one. In terms of a difference between Obama and Romney, to the extent that we can know what either one of them is going to do, you seem in the piece to be sure, you seem to think that Romney doesn't care about choice as an issue, about abortion rights as an issue. That may or may not be the case, but that's not relevant. The real question is, what would a Romney administration do? Now, it seems to me that there is a difference, and I think you and I actually had a Twitter exchange about this probably a year ago at this point. For me, a lot of it comes down to the Supreme Court. You seem to think that there's not going to be a difference in terms of the possible appointments to the Supreme Court. Let me hear your perspective on that. Is that a fair characterization?
No, I don't think that. I don't think that. I think that it's more likely that Obama will appoint justices which have some modicum of social justice in their in the way that they think about the world. And I think that that's I don't think that that's nothing.
Right. Okay. I mean, I think we can agree that Romney is far more likely to appoint justices who would be willing to curtail a woman's right to choose when it comes to that, far more likely to appoint justices who might find that DOMA is constitutional, issues like that, right? And more religion in the classroom, et cetera, et cetera. We can agree on that.
I mean, I think that the Supreme Court, in my opinion, is gone. I think it's 5-4 now. And So Romney could make it 6-3 or 7-2, but I think that liberals have to sort of begin to think about strategies to get around the Supreme Court at this point.
I think that's true too, but we also have two of that five block who are in their mid-70s. Now it's possible Scalia could live forever. Who knows? But 6-3 is also probably a generation.
What the court has done over the last 20 years. We need new strategies. I mean, there's not time for a traditional reformist oh, let's wait 20 years and maybe we can, you know, get a 5-4 majority on the court. We just don't have time for that. So I don't think it really matters that much.
We're not talking 20 years.
I think there are definitely some significant points to that. But, I mean, let's also not forget that, you know, that Barack Obama entrenched the Hyde Amendment in his, you know, in Obamacare. And so if you talk about a woman's right to choose, it's certainly more likely that the Republicans will use that issue because that's what their base wants. But Barack Obama believes in the right to choose only for people who can afford it. And that, to me, is immoral. And I think that we should recognize that. I think we should be as outraged about the Hyde Amendment as we are about, you know, the possibility of overturning Roe v. Wade.
Well,
because to me, access to abortion is a fundamental right. But that means that access to abortion is a fundamental right. You can't just say, oh, well, you know, young women shouldn't have Plan B because I'm a father and I have two girls. And so I know what that means. Barack Obama said that. And so you can't pretend like this guy is some great warrior for pro-choice cause.
I'm not making a case for President Obama in a vacuum here. I'm making a case for voting for President Obama in the context of one of two guys are going to be president. One or two guys are going to shape the future. Now, it's not 20 years when we talk to the Supreme Court.
No, wait. You said one or two guys are going to be president. That's true. One of two guys are going to shape the future. That's not true. Okay, this is where people keep missing the argument. If you protest, if you get out there and you organize and you take things away from the elite that they want, they will respond. Okay, Barack Obama and Mitt Romney do not have to shape our future, and that is fundamentally what I'm saying.
All right,
you
I
believe
would agree with that
the two
as well.
Candidates who have the same economic strategy, essentially, with some minor differences, that one of those two people is going to be the dictator of this country, then just write it off.
Well, get out of politics.
Matt, you don't understand social change.
I agree with that. We're talking in the context of I do think that there's going to be a big difference, frankly, between Obama Supreme Court and a Romney Supreme Court. I do think 6-3 makes a huge difference.
But look, there's also going to be a difference between an anti-war movement under Mitt Romney and an anti-war movement under Barack Obama. I mean, these things do matter. How the people respond does matter.
Let me finish.
And I think what we've seen over the last four years is that Democrats are simply unwilling to hold Barack Obama accountable.
I understand holding accountable, I was hoping to spend the bulk of this interview to talk about the social movements and the protests, but we need to go through this part of it because it's the bulk of your piece and it's what's talked about. I think that it's very unlikely that a guy like Scalia and Kennedy are going to be serving until they're well into their 90s. I think they're going to go. Now, it could be 15 years, but that's going to make a big difference if Ruth Bader Ginsburg or Breyer is replaced by someone who is 50 years old. It's going to be a difference between 15 years and probably 35 years. Now, with that said, I think that there's a clear difference when it comes to issues of a woman's right to choose, of these social issues. I also think that while the difference is not as stark, we still have, just in this term alone, I think it was, Knox v. SEIU, which severely hurt the ability for labor unions to organize. Now, yes, I know we may be long past the time where labor unions are an important force in this country, but nevertheless, that was a 5-4 decision. There was an AT&T case out in California about access to the courts, essentially for tort remedies. That was a 5-4 decision. There are other Citizens United. There is a difference with the Supreme Court, and I think that to a certain extent, if nothing else, we're on the precipice of a timeline of the potential to flip back to a 5-4 that is more progressive, not progressive per se, but more so, more towards that end of the spectrum, and that it seems to
me. But Sam, we don't have time for this. Okay. Like, 3,000 people died with Hurricane Katrina. New York, just subways just got flooded. We don't have time for this kind of reformist, incrementalist nonsense. We need a real resistance movement. We need actual challenges to our institutions. We can't play little games like saying, oh, nine people in robes and two candidates are going to determine our entire future. I simply reject that way of thinking about it.
Okay.
And I reject it for a very simple reason. I don't want to die in a massive climate catastrophe. And if you don't want to die in a massive climate catastrophe, then you should start thinking about what that means.
How
and
will
the real
President Mitt Romney help us in terms of that urgency? I mean, you say
neither will Barack Obama. Come on. That
well,
is
no,
the point
I'm
of this
not
piece.
Saying that he
we have
will.
More
no.
investment going but, into tar sands and mining under Barack Obama than we did under George Bush. Come on, Sam.
I understand, but I'm not talking about George Bush. And I'm not talking about whether or not we should have social movements. I'm just talking about when people go to cast their vote, if it makes no difference whatsoever.
I didn't say it makes no difference. I said it's impossible to know who will be a better president.
Well,
right? But I wanted to make the case
we do know
against
this.
Barack Obama
we do know this.
On progressive grounds.
If Romney and Obama will be equally bad in terms of addressing
climate change. I didn't say they'd be equally bad. I said that it's impossible to know who would be better. There are good reasons to vote for Barack Obama. There are also good reasons to vote for Mitt Romney.
What
there
are
the good
reasons
to
vote for
party.
Mitt Romney?
I happen to come down on the third party side because I didn't see anything in Barack Obama and Mitt Romney's platform or track record that suggested that they would be a president I would want to vote.
But what is,
but I think
what is
we
the
have
value
to start
of right,
taking
let's,
response.
Then let's get to this, Matt. What is the value of voting for someone you know can't win?
The value of a vote, I mean, first of all, most votes don't matter. I mean, we know that. So what is the point of voting is really what you're asking.
No,
and to me, the point
no,
of voting.
I'm not asking that. I'm asking for what is the value of voting for someone you know can't win? If voting doesn't matter, then people should just vote for Barack Obama if they want to. They should just vote. I mean, it doesn't. Then this whole conversation is moot. Why write this piece now? Why not write it after the election?
Well, because I wanted people to hear. First of all, I just don't. Again, I think that voting, is a relatively unimportant civic act. But to the extent that you're going to do it, I think you should use it to dedicate yourself to a principled stand on how to transform society, and that can then lead to other things that do make a difference: direct action, social change.
Let's get to this dedicating yourself to government and trying to govern. I want
to
get to this thing about dedicating yourself to social action. So in other words, if I vote for President Obama, somehow I am not dedicating myself to agitating against policies of his that I don't like. Somehow I'm not dedicating myself to fighting for the diminishment of fossil fuels. I mean, what if I just say?
No,
that
I'm not saying that. I'm not saying that. I think I have. I mean, look, if you vote for in the piece, I said one of the things I said. If you're willing to say Barack Obama has imposed a far more authoritarian structure on our culture, and he's done all sorts of things, including murdering people with drone strikes and enriching the oligarchs. But I think he is a better choice than Mitt Romney. Fine, go ahead and do that. What I really object to, because I think that if you do that, you're willing to acknowledge the reality of what this guy has done, then I think you can move forward and say we need to genuinely put pressure on him to change.
That's exactly direction where I've been
on
at
the
for
political
months.
Elites. My problem is most people who vote for Barack Obama don't actually think that. Most people say, he'd lesser of two evils. Oh, it's the system, et cetera, et cetera. And those aren't necessarily untrue.
Well,
but they're also unwilling to actually acknowledge that this guy has a policy agenda that he's implemented. And that was my goal, is I want people to understand that this guy had a policy agenda, that he implemented it, and that we didn't resist that policy agenda, and we should have.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. I mean, I agree with that assessment. For me, it is a decision of a lesser of two evils.
And I called for a primary against Obama
I did
about,
too.
I don't know, 12,
on your show,
ago. And I was told the same thing I'm told today. You're a nader. You want Mitt Romney or the Republicans to win. I've worked on primaries in the Democratic Party for a long time, as you know, and the same arguments are always trotted out. Not just for not just for why we should elect Democrats over Republicans, but why we should elect conservative Democrats over liberal Democrats in primaries. So I don't accept those arguments then, and I don't accept them now. And fundamentally, I think social change comes from the people. And that's what this piece was about. We have to really acknowledge that and understand what it means. And if you vote third party, it means you do understand what it means. And it means you have dedicated yourself to this.
Now, see, now that's the part that I have a problem with. Like, look, I also called for a primary challenge against Obama. Apparently no one wanted to step up, and I think there was a lot of reasons for that. I agree with you that any calls, you know, there's a lot of reasons why I think people didn't. There was no one there, essentially, to primary Obama, not the least of which because he had such a strong liberal support. And I am, on some level, also very sympathetic to Glenn Ford's argument. We had him on this program a couple of months ago to talk about that piece. But I also, while I agree that social movements are of paramount importance, I think that we make a mistake, and it is very facile to say that there's no difference and no implications as to who will be the president in January. Now, I think the argument...
I didn't say that. I said that the risk of Barack Obama is significant and that the risk of Mitt Romney is also significant.
Do you see the risk of a Romney to be more significant or less significant? Now, you're going to say, I don't know. But Matt, okay, I look at a Republican Party. I don't see, there's nothing about Mitt Romney. We're both from Massachusetts. We know this guy. There's nothing about Mitt Romney that leads me to believe that if he gets a bill saying whatever it is, reinstate DOMA or make it within a or whether or not it comes time to appoint a right wing judge, that he won't do it. And I think
Let's go to the data, because I mean, ultimately, when you're talking about policy, what you're really talking about is what the shape of the country should be. So I saw some really interesting data by a guy named Joe Eversberger, who sent it to me today. The deunionization of the country, so the change in the share of unionized workforce, was the country deunionized most aggressively during the Reagan administration since 1972, if you look at presidents. But the second fastest rate of deunionization took place under Clinton. The third took place under Obama. Okay, and the fourth took place under George W. Bush. So if you're, and the same is true of the average share of income going to the top 1%. The biggest increase was under Reagan, but the second biggest was under Clinton, and the third was under Obama. The fourth was under George Bush. So if you're looking at the larger macro trends and the output of these policies, I don't think it's fair to say that the Republicans are always worse. Sometimes the Democrats are worse. And I think we have to actually start to understand why that is.
Do you think that it's let's talk about Medicaid, for instance. I mean, in terms of paying for people's time in nursing homes.
Can you respond to that? I mean, I just gave you some data. I mean, can you respond to the actual data?
To the data
because
that
you bring
we
up
had,
Medicaid. I'll respond to had, Medicaid, but I actually just put the deunionization was faster under Clinton than it was under George W. Bush. It was faster under Obama than it was under George W. Bush. It was faster under Reagan than everyone. And the same thing is true of income of growth of the rich as a share of income. Fastest under Reagan, second fastest under Clinton, third fastest under Obama, fourth fastest under George W.
Well, I mean,
what do you think that means? I mean, what does that mean?
Well, I definitely think it means that policy choices in the main are dictated by the rich. And that parties don't make much of a difference at that level. I mean, I've spent every day for the past 2 years saying that in one theme or another. But that doesn't necessarily mean that I'm willing to, I guess, enhance the ability of those people to sort of underfund poor people. To take away people's health care. I mean, I have been talking ad nauseum about my belief that President Obama is going to cut Social Security through cost of living increases come January or February. I I'm not blind to these realities, but I'm also not blind to the fact that there are, even if it's just marginal, we're talking about hundreds of thousands, if not millions of people who are better off under an Obama administration than a Romney administration, to the extent that we can know in any way what they're going to be able to do. I mean, that's the reality. I know
that. All I'm saying is that if you look at the data, under Obama, 1.6 million more women are now in poverty than they were when he entered office.
Well, but come on, Matt. We had a massive financial crisis.
If you look at predatory lending, and if you look at, you know, foreclosures, although the data on foreclosures isn't totally clear yet, but this disproportionately impacts women. The fastest growing group in prison.
You're totally discounting
is women.
The financial crisis.
But you can't just say a women's rights are about choice.
I'm not just saying
you have to look at it in a broader context. And frankly, I think Obama is as likely to cut Medicaid as Mitt Romney is.
Well, I don't.
So
I mean, I don't really see. It's not.
And Obama extended Medicaid not because he wanted to cover the poor, but because Walmart wanted it, so that they would have to pay, you know, less in benefits. They've been complaining about benefits for a long time. So, I mean, it's like there are larger factors here.
Obama would made it. It was easier for Obama to extend this Medicaid because of his party, and to the extent that he has an electoral base, that's what they wanted. And that's also going to influence Mitt Romney's
decisions.
Well,
OK, so except that George Bush, you know, had a massive prescription drug benefit that he implemented, mm-hmm. Medicare Part D, which helped a lot of seniors. Even though it was done in an incredibly corrupt manner, it happened under the Republicans, under Republican Congress, House and Senate, and George Bush, because of the business interests behind it.
Right. I mean, let me ask you this. When it comes time to fund the cleanup, the disaster relief for this hurricane, for instance, and that's going to come up sometime in January or February, right? And President Obama is going to say, we need this cash. And the Republicans in the House are going to say, not unless we cut somewhere else. Where do you think there would be even any fight to this in terms of Romney? Or do you think that Romney would, his first act would be to rebut the Republican held Congress, or no?
It's hard to say because, well, let's look at the data. OK, so under Katrina, right, George Bush essentially there wasn't a lot of really effective management or good funding to go into fixing what happened in New Orleans. And that was true under George Bush, but then it was also true under Barack Obama. I mean, he didn't really fix it, even though it was something that he campaigned on. So I think it would be hard to say that Barack Obama would be more likely
to Congress. When President Obama did go to Congress looking for additional funds, additional relief funds, both times the Republican Congress said, nuh-uh, not unless we offset this. When we talk about the droughts.
But look, I mean, the Republican Congress did that because Barack Obama is president. And Barack Obama, he believes in fiscal austerity. So who knows? He might say, yeah, it's a great opportunity for me to cut more. I mean, he brags about spending cuts. So like maybe Mitt Romney has said don't cut spending during a recession. I'm not saying that Mitt Romney agrees with it. And I'm not saying that Barack Obama is more likely to be a worse president on this matter. I just don't know. And I think that there's evidence in both areas. But I also want to point out that we're leaving out, again, we keep leaving out the people themselves. And I think that the question really is, what can we do to ensure that repair happens in an effective and sustainable manner in New York and in the Northeast? We have to harden the infrastructure for climate change.
Right.
We have to do a crash course on carbon reduction. And that will not happen under either Mitt Romney or Barack Obama without extreme advocacy from institutional groups who right now are too busy working to reelect President Obama than deal with the issues they're tasked with, which is climate change. And I think that's just undeniable.
Yeah. I would agree with that. And I think to a certain extent, my lesson under George Bush when, you know, and I speak as someone who was a Nader voter in 2000 or, you know, vote swapped from New York. What are you going to do? But that my experience was is that unlike under President Obama, the lines of what you talk about, really dedicated people who are genuinely dedicated, institutions that are genuinely dedicated to progressive change, are completely clouded. That it seems to me that under a Mitt Romney presidency, what happens is that all that energy is simply in furtherance of partisan goals, and there's no real growth of the left. And that's, you know, I think to the extent that we want to make this election simply about a theory of change that comes from the ground up, I mean, I think that gets very short shrift. I mean, for the 8 years that I was, or 4 years, I guess, 5 years that I was professionally agitating against George Bush, there was a lot of people who I would speak to and interview who would never say it's okay to cut Social Security. And to a certain extent, I think a lot of those differences become more clear, and the size of the problem and the nature of the problem, I think, is far more clear, frankly, under a Democratic administration than a Republican one, because I don't think, frankly, that we were any closer to change after George Bush. I think we're actually, in some respects, far closer now, because it's far easier to see where the people's incentives and agendas line up.
Okay.
What's your sense of that?
Well, I just, I guess I look at the question slightly differently. And my, you know, I there's a political theorist that I really like, named Tom Ferguson, who talks about the golden rule theory of politics, which is that American politics is not really about voters. It's about stakeholders and investors who fund elections and fund think tanks and whatnot. And those business and labor coalitions are quite meaningful in terms of determining policy. And so, and it's not that the public is always irrelevant. They are sometimes, but they're just disorganized. And so what I'm trying to figure out is, how do you create new stakeholders or move existing stakeholders to a coalition that it wants to actually deal with climate change in a serious way? And I don't know how to do that, but I think it has to start with recognizing that the Obama and Romney coalitions are actually basically the same coalition of fossil fuel interests and finance, and that's our opposition. And we have to figure out a way to craft a new set of stakeholders, or bring stakeholders from within the corporate world and the labor world towards a new coalition which works for a more sustainable global economic order.
And my argument is that I think it becomes clearer, I think, that the Obama administration and the Romney administration represent those same people under an Obama administration, it seems to me, because 6 months into a Romney administration, we're just talking about the Republicans being the party of the oligopies. We forget, I mean, that, you know, to the extent of a theory of change, I mean, I think there's as much to be said about that as your argument. I just don't see why the citizenry, as you suggest in your piece, is going to get better under Romney, or it's not. It's just going to be basically more sort of just partisanship. I mean, not partisan in the sense that we're polarized, but it's going to be more the attacks on Romney are going to be less about the issues and more about the Democrats.
I guess I just don't. Yeah. Okay. Well, I don't have an answer. I would say that I think it's important for individuals and groups who are dissatisfied with the direction of the country to make that clear and begin to organize a coalition that is opposed to to the existing direction. And so I think that one way of making that clear, at least to yourself, is to not vote for either of the two political parties. But if you vote for one of them and you also say, I'm going to organize and, you know, aggressively advocate in moments like this during, say, the aftermath of Hurricane Sandy, for a new direction, then that's good too. That's, I guess, the basic, that's the basic idea behind the piece. Just look at the situation honestly. There is a strong case to be made against Barack Obama and his policy framework.
Well, I think we've come to a point of agreement now, and I appreciate your taking the time. And it's definitely.
But let me ask you this. I want to ask a question to you, Sam,
please.
If you don't mind, which is, why is this election so important to you? I mean, it's so, like, you're so emotional about the votes and whether one vote could, you know, really matters. I mean, where is this kind of enormous, I don't know, feeling of importance around this election coming from?
Well, I mean, I think you're overstating my emotion in this. I mean, I'm interviewing you about this piece. Yesterday, my interview was about how food has become financialized, which had nothing to do about the election. But I mean, I do think that there are real implications for people in terms of the outcome of this election. And most of those implications, in my mind, are centered around the Supreme Court. I think that there's very strong arguments that in terms of real world suffering, that we're going to see more of it under Romney than we would under President Obama. I think there's a real reason to believe that President Romney would be more likely to get us into a full-fledged war. This is not being blind at all to the to President Obama's expanding drone programs. I don't like to get into the business of weighing, which loss of life is worse, but I think that, you know, I witnessed George Bush lead us into a war that was illegal and displaced 4 million people and killed, at the very least, several hundred thousand innocent civilians. So I do think that there are implications here. Do I think it's the end-all, be-all? No. And, my program, what I talk about for 90 minutes a day over the past 2 years has reflected that. But, today we had on you who had this piece that a lot of people are talking about. And so I don't know that I don't know if you've characterized my emotions about this. I also, I'm a radio host. So there's when I talk about anything, I try and make it dramatic and exciting so that people will continue to listen. But I don't think this is the end all be all. I think this is just the beginning of basically waging a very strong defensive fight against President Obama. But I think that it's one that there's more opportunity for leverage under a President Obama than under a President Romney.
Okay. Those are all reasonable answers.
Thank you. All right, folks. Matt Stoller, I appreciate your coming on. Buddy, thank you very much.
Hey, thanks for having me.
And that dude, Russell Banks, should give you more time back on the show.
Russell Brand.
Russell Brand. Russell Brand should give you more time on the show.
Well, I appreciate the opportunity here.
Oh, okay. Well, yeah. All right, thanks for coming on.
Thanks a lot.
All right, bye-bye. All right, folks, we've gone a little late. We're going to head into the better half of the program. That was a wild and woolly one. We'll talk more about it in the better half of the program. You can become a member to this show by joining at majority.fm. Sorry for the technical difficulties. We will endeavor to cut those out, but we're shorthanded today. You can support this program by becoming a member at majority.fm, regardless of who is president. We're going to be agitating for more progressive change in the future. The nature of that agitation will obviously be a function of who is president on some level, but on another level, it's really about, I think Stoller is absolutely right, it's about building strong and lasting coalitions. I don't buy into the idea that this is about self-identification. I believe it's about action and knowing what the implications of your actions are. And I think voting is, in particular, one of those things that is not about self-identification. Heck, if you want, come out of the voting booth and lie about who you voted for. But it will have the same impact, in my estimation. The idea that the elites are going to get the message if you vote for a third party versus President Obama, I don't see any evidence of that. I didn't see it. I didn't see it after 2000. I mean, there's no evidence to believe that. If it's, and I think in Matt's world, it is really more about self-affirmation. I think that you can self-affirm in other ways that are more effective, and don't mean that we're looking at Medicare cuts, or don't mean that we're looking at further erosion of a woman's right to choose, or et cetera, et cetera. You know, that's the reality. I think a lot of like, but that's it. Okay, folks, now it's time for us to head into the better half of the program. You can support us, like I said, by becoming a member at majority.fm. Give us a good review on iTunes. Buy your Amazon junk through our Amazon link at majority.fm/support the show. Email us at majorityreporters@gmail.com. You want to do a one-time donation button? Go to majority.fm/support the show. Click it. How else can you support? We got merch. JustCoffee.coop. Fair trade coffee, tea, chocolate. 10% discount. Coupon code majority. Check it out. Want to call us? 646-257-3920 in the better half of the program. See you there. Folks, we are back. It is the better half of the program. We'll go long today. That was quite an interview. I mean, I like Matt. I've known him for years, and I think you know, the better large part of that piece, I think, is spot on. I don't get the whole self-expression thing. Let's go to the IMs. Bush and Chains. Obama supporters actually hate Obama's policies. Assange, to make Democrats get serious about civil liberties, people have to vote Republican. I never thought I would see the day when Sam would excuse Monger Obama's criminal financial incompetence. Your summation of the last 4 years just shows how completely clueless you are. The U.S. never came out of a recession. It's still in one. You're doing a heck of a job, Sammy. No wonder this country's in a shithole. I like how glazed over the fact that Obama knowingly wanted and made the mortgage crisis even worse after the Bush administration wanted to write down massive debt. The first time you heard that story was on this program, Bush and Chains. Keep them stupid and keep them voting. I was so looking forward to this interview today. You did everything in your power to stifle the truth. Shame on you. This is the beginning of the end of Majority Report. Stoller had to admonish you on air. Shows your jingoism has gotten better. Excuses, excuses. Stop trashing your guest after he hangs up. Show a little class. I wasn't. I wasn't. Boy. Herbowitz, I think I'm thinking that Majority Report could use a binder full of Matt Binders. Wow, your guest really doesn't sound like he wants to be in this interview. Beyond the Supreme Court, the other huge reason for this election is to try and eliminate the media trend to characterize our country as right-leaning. I suppose that's a good argument, too. Rypop Phil, Sam, I just don't know what liberal judge is going to support Roe v. Wade and support one of Obama's star legislative efforts, the indefinite detention under NDAA. What liberal judge is going to support Roe v. Wade and support one of Obama's... I'm not sure I get your point. All right, let's go to the phones. First up, Lori in Florida. Welcome to the program, Lori.
Hi, Sam. So glad to join you today. Something that I've been curious about that I don't hear anyone talking about is, you know, in the past they've talked so much about Obama and his birth certificate and whatever else they want to talk about him. But here in Florida, we started our early voting last Saturday, and I received my sample ballot. And on my sample ballot, it says Mitt Romney and Paul Ryan. I thought Mitt Romney's name was Willard. And if this is a legal document that we are being told we can have all kinds of fines and things happen to us if we fraudulently vote, how is his name really Mitt?
You know, I don't know.
Is that
know.
On his birth certificate? And how can it, if it's a nickname, how can it be on a ballot?
You know, I don't know. I mean, you know, listen, I think people should be able to vote for the person. I think we should make voting as easy as possible, frankly, you know. So, I mean, I'm not terribly concerned about that. It's an interesting question, but look, you know, if people want to vote for Mitt Romney and it would confuse them to put Willard, I have no problem putting Mitt Romney there. But I imagine he's come across this question in the past, and maybe it is his legal name now. Maybe he was born Willard Mitt. I don't know. I don't know how it works. You know,
yeah, I don't know how it works either, and I haven't heard, you know, anyone talk about it. Just that, you know, they made such a big deal of President Obama's birth certificate and, you know, so many right. things about
well, of
them
course, of course.
I just didn't understand how a nickname could be put on a ballot.
That's a good question, Lori.
Why aren't we calling him Barry, you know?
Exactly. I appreciate the call.
Thank you.
Thanks. Let's go to Jim in Pennsylvania. Welcome to the program, Jim.
Hey, Sam, this is just your daily reminder that you are a sheep.
Okay, well, you got to do this on a daily basis, buddy, for it to be a daily reminder.
Hey, Sam, it's actually Matt Binder.
Oh, is it Matt?
Yeah, how are you doing, Sam? I thought I'd call in.
I was wondering. I saw the 718. I was wondering what was going on. What's up? You living large out
yeah,
there or what?
Yeah, I wish I was living large. I mean, locally in Queens, if you have to travel, everything's fine here. when you have to get anywhere else, you're pretty much trapped. There's no there's only local buses, no subway service, there's no tunnels, and the only I was reading that when I was trying to figure out if I could get into the city this morning, I was reading that if you tried to get over the Borough Bridge, it's about a 3 to 4 hour standstill in traffic.
Wow!
I wasn't going to make it in time for the show, so I'm pretty much. And so I was. They just announced on TV. They literally just announced at 2 o'clock they're going to try to run the Long Island Road trains, and I have one out by me. So hopefully, if that's the line, I will wake up at the crack of dawn. Even early, I'll come into the city at 4 a.m. This morning. There tomorrow.
Wow! Do you hear that dedication, folks?
That's dedication. That's dedication.
That is a huge dedication from Matt. Now, of course, Michael is going to have to come in a half an hour earlier than that just to.
Michael was able to find a way in today. That's
Michael got here. It was like trekking through the Andes. All right. Well, Matt, enjoy the show. We got a lot of stuff for you to edit afterwards.
Yes, I hear. All right.
We'll talk to you soon.
Yeah.
That was a good Jim from PA impression.
He did a very good Jim from PA impression. Chem Champion, as much as I sympathize with Solar, the picking out of female poverty levels is somewhat hackish. If he's not going to complete the circle and say that it's due to females in greater proportion work in the public government sector and the states had to cut their workforces, he's going to bring that up. He has to state the Obama administration Democrats failed to support the state governments. Yes, I think that's true. You must be more comfortable in talking to someone who is only about 30 years old versus someone who has studied something, say libertarianism, for 30 years. He was relatively reasonable, but that was a very smug comment. What was my comment? I don't, that my comment was smug or his comment? I'm not follow. I hope you took the comment by Liz Winstead about you being a financial guy as the anti-Semitic jab it was meant to be. Very good. Agnes O. Liberalis. Wild and woolly indeed. I didn't expect that the interview would go that way. I wanted to have more of the conversation about the idea of where we go after the election. But, you know, I'm sorry. I think if you write a piece in Salon that is entitled The Progressive Case Against Obama, if you explicitly start the piece with mentioning your argument with Daniel Ellsberg on the merits of what progressives should do on election day, I think that it is disingenuous to say that this is not an argument as to whether or not progressives should vote for President Obama. Now, we don't have the data as to who looks it, but I think that's just disingenuous, and I don't know why. I expected he would say, yes, this is my argument. But instead, we ended up getting sidetracked for 15 minutes talking about, you know, that small bore stuff. He lays out his Democratic bona fides. I agree with much of what he asserts about President Obama. I think he glosses over issues about Romney. And I think the idea of voting being a means of self-affirmation is wrong. And I've said that 100 million times before this piece was ever written. I think there's an argument as to whether or not people will be better citizens under a Romney administration. Perhaps. I mean, I think that's I think that's a fairly strong argument. It's not unlike what Glenn Ford argued. In some respects, if you consider better citizens to be more progressive. Let's go to the phones. Pam from San Francisco, welcome to the program, Pam.
Hi, Sam.
Hi, Pam.
This is a little bit Okay, this is a little bit of a change of topic, but you and Cliff spoke, I think it was last Friday, about the slight chance that Romney will win the popular vote but lose the Electoral College.
Right.
And, you know, and in 2000, it was looking very close, and I read, I think this was in Newsweek, at the weirdest, I mean, it was Newsweek or The New Yorker, it was completely mainstream, but I read during the fuss after the election that Bush had a complaint that had been written, and he was ready to file it on the chance that he won the popular vote, but not the Electoral College, because it was so close it looked as though
right.
it could go either way.
Right.
And I somehow, and then all of a sudden, you know, there's been this huge attack on Nate Silver, and he calculates who's going to win the election based on the Electoral College. And I feel as though there's a chance that that's sort of trying to soften things up and on the off chance that Romney does win the popular vote.
I wouldn't doubt it. I mean, I think that the reaction that we're going to see by the right is the knee-jerk reaction is going to be the electoral, that President Obama is not a legitimate president. I mean, I think they're going to say this anyways. I think that just in this instance, they're going to say it because of the Electoral College. And my hope is if that were to happen, it's highly unlikely that that energy could be used to get rid of the Electoral College. The Republicans won't do it because they know that it's not in their long-term advantage. But, yeah, there's no doubt in my mind, of course. Of course they want to discount Nate Silver because they're going to want to contest this election if it's anywhere close. And any predictors of an Obama win, you should really deal with that now. You want to soften it up. I think you're absolutely right, Pam. I mean, whether or not that's going to be effective and whether that's going to be meaningful in any way, I don't know. I think that, you know, so I, you know, it remains to be seen, but I think you're not mistaken in that assessment. Definitely.
Yeah. I mean, there was a political piece that came out, I think maybe on Monday, and, it got a lot of attention, and a lot of people were talking, writing about it on Twitter. And the only argument I heard against it was people saying, "Oh, these pundits are upset because they don't understand statistics, and they just, you know, they don't want no math." And it's like, I think there's a much more devious reason for that attack.
I think you're right.
Apparently, it came off of something that Jeff Scarborough said about how it's impossible that there's a 74% chance that Obama would win the election.
Well, look, I can tell you this, that if we all recall what the basis of that Supreme Court ruling that essentially allowed President George Bush to become president, and it was the court didn't want to do anything that would in any way prejudice the perception that Bush had won the election, essentially. And so there is definitely historical precedent for the value of creating a perception. Got to jump,
okay.
Pam. Thanks for the call.
Thanks very much. Okay, bye.
Right. Let's go to Herbowitz from Michigan. Welcome to the program, Herbowitz.
Hi, Sam.
How you doing?
I voted for Nader in 96 and in 2000. And really, I really regretted it, even though I very strongly agreed with many of Nader's policies. And really, the problem with voting for Nader or a third party is that the media doesn't really pay any attention to it.
That's right.
You know, when the close race that Gore had with Bush, I mean, basically, whoever comes out in a close race like that, no matter what third party kind of helps swing that along, you know, it basically gets put as our country is leaning right or leaning left. And so if our country was 55% left, but 7% voted for a progressive candidate and a Republican won, what would end up, the media would ignore that, and they would just say how, you know, this is a right-wing country and we should have anti-union policies, we shouldn't talk about climate change. You know, we have to get to a point where we really are just pushing the country to the left. And
yeah. Herbowitz, I think you're right. And frankly, I think that's part of
Obama.
That's part of the reason why I think Matt made this argument about self-affirmation, because I don't think you can credibly make the argument that you're now sending a message to anybody but yourself. Now, and he doesn't attempt to make that argument in his piece. And I think the reason why is what you just stated. I fundamentally disagree with the idea that voting is about self-affirmation. I just fundamentally disagree with that idea. This is not about, you don't vote because you're standing up and saying, these are my values. The way you stand up and say, these are my values, is by standing up and saying, these are my values. And then acting upon that is going to reasonably bring about the actualization of those values. The self-affirmation thing, I think, is the weakest part of Matt's argument. And unfortunately, I think that's all that he had left there. He won't make an argument that somehow, although he seems to also indicate that he thinks that people are going to be better citizens under Romney, there may be some validity to that, but I don't know that those better citizens are going to be able to stop Romney's agenda. And that's the problem, is that some people are going to pay the price for their being able to say, I'm a better citizen now. And it won't be the same people, but appreciate the call. Good point, Herbowitz. Let's go to Kim from LA. Welcome to the program, Kim.
Hi. I had emailed you with that article saying, oh, why don't you have Matt Stoller on? Because I want to talk about the policies, his whole policy thing, which is what you kept trying to get to today. And at the same time, I sent his piece to a listserv that I'm on, where people are more conservative than me. And I said, you know, I don't want this to be about third-party election. Let's talk about policies after the election. And everybody was just, like, yelling at me, we shouldn't talk about third parties, let's not talk about it, just, you know, blah, 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 let's just vote. And it's so distracting, that first part of his article, you know, the whole voting third party thing, when really all I want to talk about is, like, what are we going to do after the election? Whichever of these conservative people that don't really represent us get elected, what are we going to do? How are we going to push our agenda forward? So, you know, the same thing happened to you today, you know. It was a very interesting conversation.
When Matt writes about these things after the election, we'll have him back and talk on it, because it is, I feel like, I mean, it's very hard to have this piece, which is in two different pieces. And you can't, you know, there's a reason why he writes it before the election, is because that piece is going to, that the first half is going to get more play. And unfortunately, I think some of his message in the second half gets lost because of that. We're not going to forget that stuff come mid-November. You know, well, maybe mid-November, I might take a week, but take a vacation. But certainly, you know, we're going to be talking about these issues going forward, because, you know, Matt is very right in that at the end of the day, some of the bigger issues of our time are not going to be addressed by either party. And
right.
I don't perceive that as an excuse to ignore those people who will be helped will be hurt more under an Romney administration. But nevertheless, I think, you know, the point that the real game in town at the end of the day is not the presidential race, I think, is an accurate one. It just so happens that time works in a linear fashion, and the vast majority of the country believes otherwise. And even I would say the majority of this audience is very interested in electoral politics. I mean, I can see the numbers. And, you know, it's this is, you know, I'm human, and there is a certain amount of drama to this. You know, I live, you know, I, as much as I try and live in a total bubble, completely shut off from everyone and everyone, everything around me, I still can't escape that the one thing that people seem to have on their mind is this election. So it is what it is.
Yeah. So let's just, you know, table this conversation until, you know, a week from now. And first of all, I don't think it's going to be decided next Tuesday. I really think there are going to be so many problems. It's going to be a mess Tuesday night. So, you know, a week and a half from now, let's go back to what our policies are going to be. And, you know, there really is no other conversation right now than what's going to happen next Tuesday.
Yeah, I think you're probably right about that. Appreciate the phone call, Kim, and I will take
Well, thanks for the show. It was a great show today.
I'm glad you liked it. Let's go back to the IMs. Vienna, Havana. Home stuck in the Bronx, but at least there is power. You kept asking Matt, what are some of the reasons you would vote for Romney? But he didn't answer. But what do you think he would answer? Well, you know, I don't know. He made those assertions. I think he was just being polite. But I don't know. I think the reasons why he would vote for Romney would be because it would bring about more. Well, I think he writes in his piece. People themselves will be better citizens under a Romney administration, distrusting him and placing constraints on his behavior the way they won't on Obama. Now, see, this is where he convolutes things, because people won't do that. Progressives will do that. Democrats will do that. Republicans will not do that. Republicans will not become better citizens. No, in fact, they will go even further. Republicans don't have a problem with the drone program, but they're not, they don't have the ability to say you're anti-American at this point if you are against the drone program. Let's not forget what happened to conservatives under the Bush administration. They moved further to the right. They became more authoritarian themselves. So he's talking to progressives here. So much so that he just refers to them as people. Because conservatives are not going to become better citizens under Romney. Give me a break. Give me a break. But even that was contentious. And I don't think it should have been. We know who his audience is for this piece. Jay Tingle, I suggest that you don't play out the free portion of the program with the pilot season theme. I have a reaction that shuts off my player when I hear that song, not because it stinks, but because I've been conditioned to recognize that song as the end of the show. You should always play La Poupée qui fait non as much as possible. You're absolutely right. I totally messed that up. I'm a little bit discombobulated today, but you're right. Make a note. Make a note. Feedocrat, fantastic point from the caller about the media ignoring the performance of the third-party candidate. As he said, if 55% were left and 7% voted green, then the media would report it as a country moving to the right. Wow, just an amazing point. Yes, and the Democrats would use it in the same fashion to the extent they don't want that. Record an opener and I'll edit it in. An opener? For the better half? Okay. Nick, what do you think happened with the Greg Palast expose? Why isn't the Obama campaign using it against Romney? He could have nailed him in the debate. I even read that Ryan is blaming Obama for the Delphi outsourcing. Well, I think it's a trickier sell, maybe. You know, they've got other things, which is just the bailout. And, you know, I don't know why. I think it's probably just in terms of why. Crystal Count. Stoller accuses Cedar, known for near pathological disconnect from his emotional core, see Marin et al., of taking an emotionally overcharged position. I got to suggest the possibility of projection there. Personally, emotionally, I once felt a real desire for some payback for his sense of betrayal in Obama's behavior in office versus the progressive wave he exploited to get there. At times, Stoller hard lines can provide satisfaction, can satisfy those desires. But ultimately, Obama's a product of those systemic problems. We can't ultimately make our vote an act of payback for success in that system. So I'd venture that it's Matt who's at risk of overly emotional position on this. So he projects and accuses Spock Cedar of the same. I think that's a good point. I don't know that I've ever been accused of being overly emotional, certainly not in favor of President Obama in my entire life. Now, I will say this, to be fair to Matt, my wife finds my cadence to be overly dramatic at times. For instance, yesterday, there was a bag of stuff that she wanted to store. She's in a purging phase right now, for whatever reason. Purging of stuff that she wanted to store, or I don't know, sent to Salvation Army. I'm not sure what the deal was with the bag. So the bag was there, and there were two throw pillows on it. My wife likes to make the bed and likes to have the throw pillows in the proper location. She likes these throw pillows. Personally, I don't care about throw pillows. If I've got to knock them off the bed to go to sleep, then I don't want to put them on there in the first place. Okay, be that as it may, the pillows are in the bag. And I see the bag, and I say to my wife, you want to get rid of these pillows? I don't know if I did it that Jewish, but, you know, like when I'm responding to criticism of my wife, I hear myself sounding more Jewish. Wait, you're getting rid of these pillows? And she's like, why do you have to make a big drama about everything? No, I'm not. And I'm like, I'm not making a big drama about it. These are your favorite pillows. And I saw them in the bag for stuff to go. What if I think that's being thoughtful. I know these pillows are important to you. I'm just asking. And so we got into a big fight about whether or not I'm a drama queen. And I said, you're the one who's being dramatic. I just asked a legitimate question.
Sounds like today's interview.
Sort of. Maybe I have this effect on people. I don't know. John Miles, I agree voting shouldn't be self-affirmation. By the same token, if you live in a solidly blue state, you can make the case you shouldn't vote for Obama just for that reason. It might be a more tactical decision to help strengthen a progressive third party in your state. Absolutely. Totally agree.
Can I just say, though, here's the thing. Strengthening third parties can only come through actual electoral reform, not just voting for them. So there's actual structures in place that are serious barriers to them performing well, and you got to address those before you really even talk about having an actual third party.
Look, I don't know that I could point to any legitimate value in voting third party in a blue state. However, there's no opportunity cost. And therefore, I say, why not? Why not? Who knows? There could be potential upside. The downside is very, very, very limited, if there is any. So that's why, while I don't believe that voting is about self-affirmation or whatnot, whatever, I say, if you're living in a solidly blue state, yeah, maybe there could be an upside. Who knows? But there isn't a downside, so I wouldn't worry about it. Ultimately, the main goal should be to promote a narrative of progressive ascendancy in this country. And I think a string of Democratic wins on the presidential level helps do that. If no other reason, then Republicans can always be counted on to kick and scream and declare even a moderate like Obama as socialist. And I think there's some validity in that argument as well. We may know that Obama is not a socialist, but if the country keeps electing someone that they think is a socialist, good. Should be easier to adopt socialist policies. Hey, Sam, I heard your debate with that libertarian guy over the weekend. Were you ever tempted to talk about left anarchism or anarcho-syndicalism as advocated by Noam Chomsky? It was interesting to hear you in the position of largely defending the overall structure of society and the right winger advocating for radical change. I don't know enough about left anarchism or anarcho-syndicalism. I mean, my problem with the radical change that he was proposing is that it's basically a fig leaf for more corporate authority. I know he doesn't believe that. I think that's the case, though. Also seems to be a good way for him to make a cottage industry. Noble Baker, don't donate to the Salvation Army. They're super right-wing conservative Christians. Well, I don't, you know, I say Salvation Army. I don't. It's Goodwill, whatever the blue guys are, the Goodwill, whatever is the with the thing, Goodwill, with the face. A lot of people interpret intensity as anger. I have the same problem. Left Coast Marcus, I couldn't agree more. Throw pillows are the spawn of Satan. Thank you. Chem Championsing, I was referencing the debate you had with Stefan Malieu. He said something to the effect of, I've been studying this issue for more than 30 years, but go ahead and take your shot and try and convince me. Also, he hurt his credibility when he resorted to reading an anonymous, reading a blog post as characterizing entitlement liabilities as enormous. Yeah, somebody actually sent me an update on that, and that was from a free market think tank. Also, you know, my point about insurance, guess who picked up a lot of the disaster insurance? And the reason why there's any flooding insurance for people who don't live in... private insurance don't cover that. There's no market there for that. They can't make money without government subsidies there. So we should have no insurance for that? Okay, fine. You learn your lesson, folks. Your stuff gets wiped away. As if this doesn't impact society. I mean, they're living in a bubble, the libertarians. Hope it floats. But yes, I really enjoyed his... what do they call that? Argumentum ad authoritarium or something? I've been studying this for 30 years. Really? Well, then you should know all the answers by now. Crystal Count. Does she find the inspector on Bob's Burgers less dramatic? Try that tone on her. Bouchard was on WTF, really complimenting your inspector performance, by the way. Yeah, I'd like a little more work. So is Myla an undecided voter again this year? What does she think about Romney? She thinks Romney's a liar, and that's not because of me. That's because she has family who lives in Massachusetts, and so they can't stand Romney. All right, final I am of the day. Well, I don't have the shofar up there. Morella 622, your interaction with Nikki, I find hilarious. Reminds me of the ketchup ad on the Prairie Home Companion. Garrison Keillor dialogue with his wife complaining about the tone of voice and ending up with the, we might need more ketchup. As for Matt Stoller, I think he was the one being a little oversensitive. Well, perhaps. All right, folks. Until tomorrow on the program, gosh, I don't even know. We are we're flying by the seat of our pants here, so bear with us. See you tomorrow.
It might take all the strength I got to get to where I want, but I know somehow I'm gonna get there. I wasn't looking.